Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Women's magazines like Good Housekeeping and Ladies' Home Journal have been around since the latter half of the 19th century. In the late 1950s and early 60s, readers could find serialized fiction and serious nonfiction sandwiched between recipes for gelatin salad and housework how-tos. Now, high-circulation women's magazines hardly include long-form pieces, much less excerpted novels or hard-hitting journalism. Laura Vanderkam writes for City Journal, among other publications, and her article, Journey Through the Checkout Racks, explores a shift in content in women's magazines and what it means for its target audience. Laura, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
So give us an idea of what we might have found in a women's magazine if we opened it up in 1963.
Yes, I wanted to write this article looking at magazines from exactly 50 years ago, so issues from the spring of 1963. And what's surprising about it is how thick these magazines were back then. There's just a lot of text. There's a lot of longer articles. There would be whole condensed novels, sometimes serialized across two or three issues. It would take you a long time to get through a magazine in 1963. But that was somewhat a function of the time, in that it was assumed that women had the time to read these long magazines, which is something that's changed now.
You mentioned a couple of articles about race. Now, this is in the spring of 1963, before the March on Washington. Abortion, 10 years before Roe v. Wade. It sounds like there was a willingness to consider some serious topics. How does this differ from magazine articles in a typical woman's magazine of today?
The thing to keep in mind with modern women's magazines is that many of them, even the ones that were around in the 60s, are pitched for sort of a different part of a woman's life. It's understood that a woman is working, most likely. She's got a lot going on with her family as well. She's looking at her magazine as part of me time for herself. And as such, many of the articles are not going to deal with these serious, hard-hitting issues, because that's not what you want in your kind of me time, relaxed time. So it tends to be more about the reader herself, very much focused on her life and her feelings and her health. And that's kind of different from the outward-facing nature of many of the articles in 1963. So it's sort of ironic, as women have themselves become more outward facing, their magazines have turned more inward.
Let's go back to that 50 years ago. What do we know about the typical life of the readership in the early 1960s? Now, you cite some data from that era on how they lived and how they spent their days.
The vast majority at that point of women reading women's magazines would not have been in the workforce. It was starting to change, certainly, but at that point, Good Housekeeping had a statistic that about 40% of its readers also had an outside job apart from their work at home. In general, people had gotten married much younger. The age of first marriage had briefly dipped into the teens in the 50s, or early 60s. They were having more children. The average family, the average woman, had close to four children. So it was a different sort of life. There is also a lot of time spent on housework. Married women in the early 1960s were spending about 35 hours per week on housework, which, if you think about it, really is a full-time job. That is not remotely the case anymore. Even women who are not in the workforce spend many fewer hours on the care and keeping of their houses now. So you don't see anywhere near the level of intense homemaking instruction that you would have at that point in time.
Now, this is the same time, early 1960s, when we talk about the MRS degree, right? Women go to college to meet their future husband. At least this is true among many middle-class neighborhoods and women. They're college-educated and maybe a little frustrated at home. Were these women's magazines trying to appeal to, you know, a woman who was a little bit more voracious about the world outside of waxing her floor?
It was quite a split. I found that was one of the most fascinating things about these 1960s magazines. Betty Friedan, there's kind of a mythology that her pieces were rejected by all the women's magazines. It's not true. They ran them. She was in many of these magazines writing about this problem that had no name, that women were trading their brains for brooms in one of her memorable phrases that she used in one of these magazines, which got quite an interesting response. At the time that she wrote an article saying that, the letters against her were running about 4-1, I think. And the reason, of course, is people were trying to think it through at that point. There were a lot of people invested in the lives they had. And there are certain things that were lost. I mean, there's certain domestic arts that are perhaps not celebrated to the extent that they could be anymore. But it's also interesting to see what's been gained. One of the examples I used in the piece is that there was a profile of a female doctor in one of the 1963 magazines that took almost this anthropological approach to it. It was like this gorillas in the mist look at this woman doctor and how she, you know, had her life. Whereas in the modern magazines, there are plenty of women doctors quoted. And my favorite was one short profile of a woman who was a doctor. It wasn't about her being a doctor at all. It was about how she lost 40 pounds and how you can too. So it's just a totally different mindset in that 50 years.
We're speaking with the author and journalist, Laura Vanderkam. She recently wrote for the City Journal an article that explores the shift in content in women's magazines from 50 years ago to today. Well, now women spend much less time on housework and more time with their working lives and their family lives. And they're more careful of their time, obviously. But there are also so many other places to turn for women's media. I mean, a million channels to watch, a lot more segmented audience. Do you think that's part of it? The audience for women's magazines has just been thinned out.
It has been. And if you look at the circulation figures, magazines like Good Housekeeping and Ladies' Home Journal and Red Book reached a tremendous proportion of the female U.S. population. Literally, it could have been about 10% of the demographic group that it was aimed at. So these magazines had incredible influence. And that's just something very few media outlets can do anymore. We live in a very fragmented world. If there's any particular niche you want to explore, there's a blog for that. There's probably a publication online for that. And so one of the things you see is that the advertising dollars for this sort of magazine shrink because there's very few products that can be advertised for all women between the ages of 25 and 55. And so, you know, especially something like Ladies' Home Journal, I was amazed at how short the magazine was when I looked at it from the 2013 editions. It's partly that people have limited time span, attention span. They don't want to spend all day reading a magazine, but it's also that the advertising pages aren't there to support it. Advertisers want very specific things, and that's not something a general interest magazine can offer anymore.
Port Magazine's summer issue declares the golden age of print media. So the magazine is still doing very well, according to Port Magazine's editor-in-chief. There's a photograph of about six men, including Graydon Carter of Vanity Fair, David Remnick of The New Yorker on the cover of that. No women, something that a number of critics have commented on. But let's look at, Laura, who is actually driving the content for women's magazines. Is it predominantly women?
All, I think, of the women's magazines now have women editor-in-chief. That is something that was actually not the case in the earlier part of the 20th century. There are definitely men running many of the women's magazines. I think that getting at that magazine cover you were talking about, there's a certain mindset about women and women's literature and things written for and about women that assumes it's not as serious as everything else. And it's true that modern women's magazines do have a bit of this more fluffier aspect, but there's things aimed at men that do too. I think that women are producing many things that are worth reading, maybe not all in women's magazines, but they are elsewhere. I would hope that people would give that the seriousness it deserves.
Laura Vanderkam, journalist and author of two self-help books, What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast and 168 Hours. You have more time than you think. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have a link to read Laura's article for yourself. It's called Journey Through the Checkout Racks. That's at wordofmouthradio.org.